hell. You belong to Jesus, and he will save you. Come. The girl suddenly burst into tears. She was only partly sobered by the shock of meeting Virginia. Virginia looked around again. Where does Mr. Gray live? She asked. She knew that the evangelist boarded somewhere near the tent. A number of voices gave the direction. Come, Lorene. I want you to go with me to Mr. Gray's, she said, still keeping her hold of the swaying, trembling creature who moaned and sobbed and now clung to her as firmly as before she had repulsed her. So the two moved on through the rectangle toward the evangelist's lodging place. The sight seemed to impress the rectangle seriously. It never took itself seriously when it was drunk, but this was different. The fact that one of the richest, most beautifully dressed girls in all Raymond was taking care of one of the rectangle's most noted characters, who reeled along under the influence of liquor, was a fact astounding enough to throw more or less dignity and importance about Lorene herself. The event of Lorene stumbling through the gutter, dead drunk, always made the rectangle laugh and jest. But Lorene staggering along with a young lady from the society circles uptown, supporting her, was another thing. The rectangle viewed it with soberness and more or less wondering admiration. When they finally reached Mr. Gray's lodging place, the woman who answered Virginia's knock said that both Mr. and Mrs. Gray were out somewhere and would not be back until 6 o'clock. Virginia had not planned anything farther than a possible appeal to the Grays, either to take charge of Lorene for a while or find some safe place for her until she was sober. She stood now at the door after the woman had spoken, and she was really at a loss to know what to do. Lorene sank down stupidly on the steps and buried her face in her arms. Virginia eyed the miserable figure of the girl with a feeling she was afraid would grow into disgust. Finally, a thought possessed her that she could not escape. What was to hinder her from taking Lorene home with her? Why should not this homeless, wretched creature, reeking with the fumes of liquor, be cared for in Virginia's own home, instead of being consigned to strangers in some hospital or house of charity? Virginia really knew very little about any such places of refuge. As a matter of fact, there were two or three such institutions in Raymond, but it is doubtful if any of them would have taken a person like Lorene in her present condition. But that was not the question with Virginia just now. What would Jesus do with Lorene? That was what Virginia faced, and she finally answered it by touching the girl again. Lorene, come. You are going home with me. We will take the car here at the corner. Lorene staggered to her feet and, to Virginia's surprise, made no trouble. She had expected resistance or a stubborn refusal to move. When they reached the corner and took the car, it was nearly full of people going uptown. Virginia was painfully conscious of the stare that greeted her and her companion as they entered, but her thought was directed more and more to the approaching scene with her grandmother. What would Madame Page say? Lorene was nearly sober now, but she was lapsing into a state of stupor. Virginia was obliged to hold fast to her arm. Several times the girl lurched heavily against her, and as the two went up the avenue, a curious crowd of so-called civilized people turned and gazed at them. When she mounted the steps of her handsome house, Virginia breathed a sigh of relief, even in the face of the interview with the grandmother. And when the door shut and she was in the wide hall with her homeless outcast, she felt equal to anything that might now come. Madame Page was in the library. Hearing Virginia come in, she came into the hall. Virginia stood there supporting Lorene, who stared stupidly at the rich magnificence of the furnishings around her. Grandmother, Virginia spoke without hesitation and very clearly, I have brought one of my friends from the rectangle. She is in trouble and has no home. I am going to care for her here a little while. Madame Page glanced from her granddaughter to Lorene in astonishment. Did you say she is one of your friends? She asked in a cold, sneering voice that hurt Virginia more than anything she had yet felt. Yes, I said so. Virginia's face flushed, but she seemed to recall a verse that Mr. Gray had used for one of his recent sermons. A friend of publicans and sinners. Surely Jesus would do this that she was doing. "Do you know what this girl is?" asked Madam Page in an angry whisper, stepping near Virginia. "I know very well. She is an outcast. You need not tell me, Grandmother. I know it even better than you do. She is drunk at this minute, but she is also a child of God. I have seen her on her knees, repentant, and I have seen hell reach out its horrible fingers after her again. And by the grace of Christ, I feel that the least I can do is to rescue her from such peril. Grandmother, we call ourselves Christians. Here is a poor, lost human creature without a home, slipping back into a life of misery and possibly eternal loss. And we have more than enough. I have brought her here, and I shall keep her." Madam Page glared at Virginia and clenched her hands. All this was contrary to her social code of conduct. How would society excuse familiarity with the scum of the streets? What would Virginia's action cost the family in the way of criticism and loss of standing, and all that long list of necessary relations which people of wealth and position must sustain to the leaders of society? To Madam Page, society represented more than the church or any other institution. It was a power to be feared and obeyed. The loss of its goodwill was a loss more to be dreaded than anything except the loss of wealth itself. She stood erect and stern and confronted Virginia, fully roused and determined. Virginia placed her arm about Lorene and calmly looked her grandmother in the face. "You shall not do this, Virginia. You can send her to the asylum for helpless women. We can pay all the expenses. We cannot afford, for the sake of our reputations, to shelter such a person." "Grandmother, I do not wish to do anything that is displeasing to you, but I must keep Lorene here tonight, and longer if it seems best." "Then you can answer for the consequences. I do not stay in the same house with a miserable..." Madam Page lost her self-control. Virginia stopped her before she could speak the next word. "Grandmother, this house is mine. It is your home with me as long as you choose to remain. But in this matter, I must act as I fully believe Jesus would in my place. I am willing to bear all that society may say or do. Society is not my God. By the side of this poor soul, I do not count the verdict of society as of any value." "I shall not stay here then," said Madam Page. She turned suddenly and walked to the end of the hall. Then she came back and, going up to Virginia, said with an emphasis that revealed her intensive excitement of passion, "You can always remember that you have driven your grandmother out of your house in favor of a drunken woman." Then, without waiting for Virginia to reply, she turned again and went upstairs. Virginia called a servant and soon had Lorene cared for. She was fast lapsing into a wretched condition. During the brief scene in the hall, she had clung to Virginia so hard that her arm was sore from the clutch of the girl's fingers. Chapter 13. When the bell rang for tea, she went down and her grandmother did not appear. She sent a servant to her room who brought back word that Madam Page was not there. A few minutes later, Rowland came in. He brought word that his grandmother had taken the evening train for the South. He had been at the station to see some friends off and had by chance met his grandmother as he was coming out. She had told him her reason for going. Virginia and Rowland comforted each other at the tea table, looking at each other with earnest, sad faces. "Rowland," said Virginia, and for the first time almost since his conversion, she realized what a wonderful thing her brother's changed life meant to her. "Do you blame me? Am I wrong?" "No, dear, I cannot believe you are. This is very painful for us. But if you think this poor creature owes her safety and salvation to your personal care, it was the only thing for you to do. Oh, Virginia, to think that we have all these years enjoyed our beautiful home and all these luxuries selfishly, forgetful of the multitudes like this woman. Surely Jesus in our place would do what you have done." And so Rowland comforted Virginia and counseled with her that evening. And of all the wonderful changes that she henceforth was to know on account of her great pledge, nothing affected her so powerfully as the thought of Rollins' change of life. Truly, this man in Christ was a new creature. Old things were passed away. Behold, all things in him had become new. Dr. West came that evening at Virginia's summons and did everything necessary for the outcast. She had drunk herself almost into delirium. The best that could be done for her now was quiet nursing and careful watching and personal love. So, in a beautiful room, with a picture of Christ walking by the sea hanging on the wall, where her bewildered eyes caught daily something more of its hidden meaning, Lorene lay, tossed she hardly knew how into this haven, and Virginia crept nearer the Master than she had ever been, as her heart went out towards this wreck which had thus been flung torn and beaten at her feet. Meanwhile, the rectangle awaited the issue of the election with more than usual interest, and Mr. Gray and his wife wept over the poor, pitiful creatures who, after a struggle with surroundings that daily tempted them, too often wearied of the struggle, and like Lorene, threw up their arms and went whirling over the cataract into the boiling abyss of their previous condition. The after-meeting at the First Church was now eagerly established. Henry Maxwell went into the lecture room on the Sunday succeeding the week of the primary and was greeted with an enthusiasm that made him tremble at first for its reality. He noted again the absence of Jasper Chase, but all the others were present, and they seemed drawn very close together by a bond of common fellowship that demanded and enjoyed mutual confidences. It was the general feeling that the Spirit of Jesus was the Spirit of very open, frank confession of experience. It seemed the most natural thing in the world, therefore, for Edward Norman to be telling all the rest of the company about the details of his newspaper. "The fact is, I have lost a great deal of money during the last 3 weeks. I cannot tell just how much. I am losing a great many subscribers every day." "What do the subscribers give as their reason for dropping the paper?" asked Mr. Maxwell. All the rest were listening eagerly. "There are a good many different reasons. Some say they want a paper that prints all the news, meaning by that the crime details, sensations like prize fights, scandals, and horrors of various kinds. Others object to the discontinuance of the Sunday edition. I have lost hundreds of subscribers by that action, although I have made satisfactory arrangements with many of the old subscribers by giving them even more in the extra Saturday edition than they formerly had in the Sunday issue. My greatest loss has come from a falling off in advertisements and from the attitude I have felt obliged to take on political questions. The last action has really cost me more than any other. The bulk of my subscribers were intensely partisan. I may as well tell you all frankly that if I continue to pursue the plan, which I honestly believe Jesus would pursue in the matter of political issues and their treatment from a nonpartisan and moral standpoint, the news will not be able to pay its operating expenses unless one factor in Raymond can be depended on." He paused a moment, and the room was very quiet. Virginia seemed specially interested. Her face glowed with interest. It was like the interest of a person who had been thinking hard of the same thing, which Norman went on to mention. "That one factor is the Christian element in Raymond. Say the news has lost heavily from the dropping off of people who do not care for a Christian daily, and from others who simply look upon a newspaper as a purveyor of all sorts of material to amuse or interest them. Are there any enough genuine Christian people in Raymond who will rally to the support of a paper such as Jesus would probably edit? Or are the habits of the church people so firmly established in their demand for the regular type of journalism that they will not take a paper unless it is stripped largely of the Christian and moral purpose? I may say in this fellowship gathering that owing to recent complications in my business affairs outside of my paper, I have been obliged to lose a large part of my fortune. I had to apply the same rule of Jesus' probable conduct to certain transactions with other men who did not apply it to their conduct, and the result has been the loss of a great deal of money. As I understand the promise we made, we were not to ask any question about, will it pay, but all our action was to be based on the one question, what would Jesus do? Acting on that rule of conduct, I have been obliged to lose nearly all the money I have accumulated in my paper. It is not necessary for me to go into details. There is no question with me now, after the 3 weeks' experience I have had, that a great many men would lose vast sums of money under the present system of business if this rule of Jesus was honestly applied. I mention my loss here because I have the fullest faith in the final success of a daily paper conducted on the lines I have recently laid down, and I had planned to put it into my entire fortune in order to win final success. As it is now, unless, as I said, the Christian people of Raymond, the church members and professing disciples will support the paper with subscriptions and advertisements, I cannot continue its publication on the present basis. Virginia asked a question. She had followed Mr. Norman's confession with the most intense eagerness. Do you mean that a Christian daily ought to be endowed with a large sum like a Christian college in order to make it pay? That is exactly what I mean. I had laid out plans for putting into the news such a variety of material in such a strong and truly interesting way that it would more than make up for whatever was absent from its columns in the way of unchristian matter. But my plans called for a very large output of money. I am very confident that a Christian daily such as Jesus would approve, containing only what he would print, can be made to succeed financially if it is planned on the right lines. But it will take a large sum of money to work out the plans. How much do you think? Asked Virginia quietly. Edward Norman looked at her keenly, and his face flushed a moment as an idea of her purpose crossed his mind. He had known her when she was a little girl in the Sunday school, and he had been on intimate business relations with her father. I should say $500,000 in a town like Raymond could be well spent in the establishment of a paper such as we have in mind, he answered. His voice trembled a little. The keen look on his grizzled face flashed out with a stern but thoroughly Christian anticipation of great achievements in the world of newspaper life, as it had opened up to him within the last few seconds. Then, said Virginia, speaking as if the thought was fully considered, I am ready to put that amount of money into the paper on the one condition, of course, that it be carried on as it has been begun. Thank God, exclaimed Mr. Maxwell softly. Norman was pale. The rest were looking at Virginia. She had more to say. Dear friend, she went on, and there was sadness in her voice that made an impression on the rest that deepened when they thought it over afterwards. I do not want any of you to credit me with an act of great generosity. I have come to know lately that the money which I have called my own is not mine, but God's. If I, as steward of his, see some wise way to invest his money, it is not an occasion for vainglory or thanks from anyone simply because I have proved in my admiration of the funds he has asked me to use for his glory. I have been thinking of this very plan for some time. The fact is, dear friends, that in our coming fight with the whiskey power in Raymond, and it has only just begun, we shall need the news to champion the Christian side. You all know that all the other papers are for the saloon. As long as the saloon exists, the work of rescuing dying souls at the rectangle is carried on at a terrible disadvantage. What can Mr. Gray do with his gospel meetings when half his converts are drinking people, daily tempted and enticed by the saloon on every corner? It would be giving up to the enemy to allow the news to fail. I have great confidence in Mr. Norman's ability. I have not seen his plans, but I have the same confidence that he has in making the paper succeed if it is carried forward on a large enough scale. I cannot believe that Christian intelligence and journalism will be inferior to unchristian intelligence, even when it comes to making the paper pay financially. So that is my reason for putting this money, God's, not mine, into this powerful agent for doing as Jesus would do. If we can keep such a paper going for 1 year, I shall be willing to see that amount of money used in that experiment. Do not thank me. Do not consider my doing it a wonderful thing. What have I done with God's money all these years but gratify my own selfish personal desires? What can I do with the rest of it but try to make some reparation for what I have stolen from God? That is the way I look at it now. I believe it is what Jesus would do. Over the lecture room swept that unseen yet